Right, we're up and running. If you are ready, for the record, I'm Ian Reynolds. It's the 27th of May 2017, and I'm in the home of Johnny Smith at Egglescliffe Village. So, we could perhaps start when and where were you born, please, Johnny?
Right, yes, I was born here, past the house next door. In 1943.
Ah, it's a little bit before me then. A little bit before me.
Well, I've already got your word for it.
Yeah. So, what could you tell me about the history of the farm?
History of the farm. Well, my family's been on the farm probably since the early 1800s. My grandfather was born here in 1850. Probably in the same room that I was born in. His wife, my grandmother, came from Billingham originally, but the family moved up to Bamborough, where I had tenancy of Bamborough Hall Farm. When I was quite young, because the family was quite large up there, we used to go and stay with one or more of our relatives for our summer holidays. In fact, the first time I had a holiday that wasn't in Northumberland was I managed to get a trip to France.
All right.
To see some friends who lived down near Tours. English people, of course, they were from Egglescliffe, but it was somewhere to go rather than have another holiday at sea houses or Bamborough.
Yeah, yeah. Be very different to sea houses, I imagine.
Well, that was inland, yes. Mind you, having stepped in the sea recently, I wonder why we didn't feel the cold then. It's freezing.
Yeah.
So chase me.
So that was it. That was being up in Northumberland.
Yes.
How did the farm here develop?
Well, my father inherited from his father,
yep,
who died as a result of an accident out hunting. My father was 16 when his father died, and he was brought home from school to organise the farming. I think he was about 16 when this happened, so it was quite a young age to have the responsibility that he had.
Very young, very young.
Yeah.
So his father, had he fallen off the horse?
Yes, he fell off a horse, and it must have been, he was a very good horseman,
mm-hmm,
but it must have been a roughish horse, because he would be able, like my father, he would be able to stick on almost anything. So it must have been a bad horse, but he hit his head on the gatepost, and that probably should have killed him, but it didn't, but his personality disappeared. And it lasted about 10 years, I think. It was at the beginning of that period when he first had his accident. My father was brought home from school.
Did he have much experience of the farm being so young or at that time?
Well, yeah, because they never went away on holiday anywhere.
Right, yeah.
Although my grandfather was a horse buyer for the army during the First World War, so he spent quite a lot of time away from home. Would send a steam engine with horse boxes on, which would go from Yarm Station.
Yeah,
you know, they would load the horses there and take them off to wherever they were trained to be gun carriers or whatever they did.
So the horses he bought for the army would have come to the farm for a while before going off.
Yeah, either here or somebody else's farm where they could be gathered together.
Right.
You know, having, I mean, 8 horses were required on a gun carriage.
Yeah.
You know, to pull it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you couldn't just find 8 horses down the road.
No.
You'd have to go quite a long way between each one to get them. But my grandmother said he was away from home quite a lot during the war. When it was over, he got back to his usual hunting trips, presumably.
So the 16-year-old had to take on the farm and organise everything?
That's my father, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And did he have many people to help?
By the time... After the war was over, the Second World War, I do remember about 10 or 12 people working for us, or for my father. But a lot of that was to do with bottling milk. He had a herd of dairy cows, which we milked mostly by hand in those days. And it's one of the reasons why there was quite a large farm staff, in that every man that worked for my father had to milk 3 cows in the morning.
Right.
And then again in the afternoon, probably.
Right.
So that's why farm work numbers were quite high for this particular farm.
So was the milk for a local market, or did it go off to somewhere else?
No, we delivered it around the village. Some of the young boys that lived in the village, they would start by asking if they could have a job here when they left school. And if they got the job, it was pretty much delivering milk. Well, at least until lunchtime.
Right.
Which I only just about remember that.
Right. You didn't get roped in for anything like that?
No.
No.
I was staff.
You were. What else was on the farm, you know, besides the dairy, or was it just dairy?
No. We were arable. My father grew potatoes. And wheat, those are all sort of sold off the farm. Barley he grew to feed the animals on, and oats for the horses. The power on the land used to be cart horses. It's now diesel engine tractors.
You know? Yeah.
But he would probably have 8 or 10 workhorses, and then your replacements, you bred yourself, you know, so that was another couple of brood mares, which you had to have a stable, etc. So most of that is guesswork from me, but informed guesswork on the, you know, on the numbers, etc.
You never personally worked with the horses?
Only for something, a small job and quiet. One of the things I do remember is in harvest time, most of the farm was running on tractors by then, but you know, the early 50s. But we did have a couple of horses and still the old carts. So the children, there'll be about four or five of us, we'd get one of the cart horses saddled and bridled up and go and bring a load of sheaves of corn up to where they were stacking it, which was, you know, how all the farming operations went in those days.
Yeah. So what was it like when the first tractors, would it be the Ferguson T20, the little grey one?
Yes.
Was that the first one?
We had a few of those.
Yeah.
But the very first tractor I remember it was an international harvester tractor, and the comical thing about it was the steering wheel was vertical. You sat on top of the differential with probably a sack on it or something, you know.
No seat.
Getting bolt marks on your trousers. Yeah, but yes, it was an international harvester tractor that my father first got, and it was a wedding present from my mother. So he did quite well.
Yeah.
Went on to more modern ones, which was the Fergie, Grey Fergie, which probably everybody had one. I do remember when we had a lineup of four, but this is before diesel engines became popular, and also a lot of people thought the tractors were too small and light for the jobs that they were going to do, like ploughing, etc. But because of its hydraulic system, it was able to act like a much bigger tractor. So Harry Ferguson, he's a fellow that started it off. Although there were tractors on farms up till then, the Ferguson was the only one that had a hydraulic system, which we can't manage without now.
Yeah.
It's part of farming.
Yeah. Did you used to drive?
Yes, because I still, in fact, have got one of the original Grey Fergies.
Have you?
Yeah. Hidden away. Yeah.
So what sort of changes in crops have taken place over the years? Because I don't think you grow potatoes anymore, do you?
No, not anymore. No. Potatoes are big money these days.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you've got to have good land to grow them on. You know, it doesn't want to be too stony or too clay, you know, because the stones will affect the harvesting. You know, and although you can get attachments for potato harvesters now that can tell the difference between a potato and a stone, even though they're exactly the same size. They've got x-ray things.
Clever.
Yeah, but that's beyond my time, that. All we had was a spinner, which went down the rows of potatoes and threw the soil up, which then landed, you know, 2 feet away, and the potatoes ended up on top. So if people picking, just had to pick them up, and they were pretty certain that there weren't any underneath the soil. So that's all. Well, even the planting is done automatically now. So there isn't as much heavy work in the fields as there used to be because of the, you know, heavy handwork, that is. Because, you know, machinery has taken over.
So when did you stop with potatoes and move on to something else?
Well, it wouldn't be something else. It would be more of the other that we already had.
Ah, right.
If I knew you were going to ask me that question, I would have worked out it was.
Right. So it would have been replaced with either the wheat or the barley or the... Yeah.
My father, we gave up growing potatoes when two little boys had a fire on top of a straw stack in our Dutch barn that burnt the whole lot down.
Oh.
Of course, the insulation for the to keep the potatoes safe from winter frosts.
Oh, yeah.
Was straw, so there was a row of bales, or so many bales high, round the outside of what you call a pie, potato pie, and the straw on top. Well, these two little boys that were having a bonfire on top of it, sort of set the whole lot alight.
Oh, crikey.
So my father then gave up growing potatoes. Everything went.
What's that?
What happened to the two little boys?
Pass. Yeah. I don't know.
You knew.
Yeah.
Was it? It was.
What?
From Pump Row. The
boys. Yeah, one of them.
Yes. I can date it to 19. It was when we were engaged.
Oh, right, yes.
Yes, and you, I remember you telling me it was 1967, it would be.
Right.
1967.
Mm. Relatively.
So that's when we must have given up.
Right. Relatively recently.
But all our potato machinery, which is specific, was in the shed. So quite a bit of it was wooden, you know, riddles that give you a certain size of potatoes. You know, but the frames for these machines were wood. So there you went.
Village boy.
Yeah. Our whole winter's supply of spuds had gone.
We were talking before, you were telling me about linseed.
Yes. Oil?
Yes.
Yeah. Also, it's a...
Why did you grow it?
Animal feed. So you're buying oil replacements to go, and it's quite high protein as well. So mixed with oats usually, and you could crush the oats and crush the linseed seeds, mix them together, and you got quite a good feed for any of the animals that would eat it, which were cattle. But sheep are eat it as well.
That's more of a supplement, is it? In addition to the, you know, obviously they're on grass.
I don't know a great deal about it now. The only thing that I do remember was trying to harvest it, and trying is the operative word there, because the stems are not necessarily very thick, but tough. You know, you can't just go along with a penknife and slice it through, because it needs... So, that's probably one of the reasons why we stopped growing it.
And how long have you grown the rape? Has that been around a long time?
Yes. Do you know when we started growing rape?
Mm.
We've probably been growing rape 25 years.
Mm,
what year does that bring us to?
Oh, I'm not going to do the maths. Obviously, at one time, there was quite a lot of... You've said there were a lot of people working on the farm. Were they all very local people living in Egglescliffe Village? Or did they have accommodation on the farm?
We had a little bit of accommodation. That house there, the farm foreman lived in. Ben used to live there. The little cottage on the corner, which was the farm foreman's son. And he had two of his sons, I think, worked for my father. When farming became more labour intensive, they used to, Victorians, would go to the thing called the hirings, which is they all gather in Yarm High Street, local.
Yeah.
And if you wanted a job, you went down there and you'd see the farmers over there, and you go and talk to them, say, will you give me a job? Or the other way was, a farmer wanted some labour, he'd be down there and going and asking the unemployed ones if they would like to work for him. So that was the Yarm hirings, and there was two dues every year One of them was probably integrated with the armed fire, you know, which was in, when is it?
October.
Yeah. And that was called the Hirings. So that's where most of the farm labourers would get introduced to farm. This house here where we are had bedrooms in the loft. So my grandfather probably had four men living in the top. And also people around the village, they were taking lodgers. I do remember somebody in Eastbourne Avenue regularly used to take a farm worker. It would probably be harvest time, you know, when there's quite a lot of handwork to
yeah.
do. Yeah, or maybe for picking potatoes, you know. Harvest would take, I don't know, a month. So that was a fairly good job for somebody or other.
Mm.
Potatoes, well, I remember we used to pick potatoes for a week. And it always clashed with half term for the schools. So the school children used to come picking potatoes
yeah.
as well.
Some people I went to school with used to do it. I never did.
Yeah.
So, did your grandfather then live in the manor house?
Yes.
Who lived in the old hall?
Farm workers.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's latterly.
Yeah?
Yeah. The fellow who was senior man on the cows, he generally would have that house. Because it was, first of all, it had a good water supply, you know, tap
mm-hmm.
in the house. Whereas we're not sure whether how many of the villagers' houses had a cold tap in the house. But I do remember two wells on the green, and there was one in that I never knew, one in Pump Row. At this end, one behind my brother's house. Those are the, you know, two I remember that you could work. But I would doubt whether many of the cottages had a tapped supply.
So what was the old hall like to live in?
Drafty. The walls are about 18 inches to 2 feet thick.
Yeah.
Stone.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why it was drafty, but maybe because the windows didn't fit very well,
yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we tried to get my father tried to get a grant way back in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Probably late 50s, early 60s. Tried to get a grant from the local council to have it done up. And the fella who came and inspected had a look around and said, what are these buildings here? Which is where the cows were, in a byre where we milked. And so he was told, you know, that's a cow byre. Oh, it's attached to this house. You can't have anybody living in it. That's why it became empty in the first place.
So the dairy part of it was actually attached to the old hall?
Yes.
Yeah, just or up against it, not part of it. Yeah.
No, it just so happens that the gap between the old hall and the new buildings was wide enough to put they did have a bath in there. So it was probably one of the only houses in the village with a bath to start with. But also it had a gas supply. and what else?
We were, you said to you thinking of that we might have lived there when we were married.
Yes.
We were unable to because of this proximity to the
cattle. That's one thing. We only considered a little bit that.
How many other changes do you think there's been with machinery? You know, horses have been edged out by the tractors.
Well, they'd very nearly been hedged out by the time I was born. It was only anybody that couldn't get hold of a tractor because Ford sent a whole load from America to come here. Also, they had a factory in Southern Ireland, Cork, I think, that was building these tractors, which are the American Ford ones, and adapted to suit British systems. My father bought one sort of after the war. They were the standard tractor because there were so many of them over here then. Yeah, everybody had one. Hand wound, you know, to get it to start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it had a little platform you stood on. The sort of a cross between a steam engine and a diesel or a petrol. Well, ours was petrol tractor.
So you were saying that at harvest time you'd get all the grain into sheaves and bring it up to the farm.
Yes.
So presumably that then had to be processed to get the grain off.
When you harvested, you brought the sheaves of corn up to the farmyard, and we had three stackyards because of the layout. It was obviously at least three farms in the first place. One was at the golf course. I don't know whether you noticed, there's buildings right in the middle of the golf course where they have their equipment. That was one farm up there. Then there was another farm, I would think, between here and straight down to the river. And then the last one, second last one, was down towards the river from here, opposite the River Leven, where that comes out into the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what we called an Armand's farm, because the tenant was called Willie Armand.
That was where David lives.
Yeah. My father took that farm over because Willie Armand died, and his son Arthur, who was working for him, didn't fancy being a farmer by himself.
Right.
So my father took the land on, and he took Arthur on as a farm worker. So everybody was happy.
So how was the grain thrashed? Was it done by hand or?
No, we get a thrashing company in. And there were a few around here. The one that I remember most was Preston's at Potto. I don't know whether you've seen.
No, they're still around.
Preston's at Potto.
Yeah.
Well, Dick Preston started out as a sort of a farm contractor. Bought a thrashing set, which that was a tractor, a thrashing machine, and another machine on the back of the thrasher, which it gathered the straw up. It was either a baler, you know, made big, those square bales, or just loose, with two strings round. And then you make that into another stack.
And that was used for bedding or for animals?
Yeah. Well, some of it for feed. Oat straw you would feed to cows. It was nearly as good as hay.
Oh.
Wheat was mostly for bedding. And the barley was somewhere in between, which because, you know, everybody wanted to buy something, so you didn't throw it away.
No, indeed. Was that a major event then, when the thrashing took place?
Yes. Yeah. It might have been 2 days, but, you know, one whole day is probably enough. So the machine would arrive sometime after lunch in the afternoon. And the workers there would set it all up. You know, you had to have the tractor at the right end driving. Flat belt about 9 inches wide and probably 40 feet long, something like that. And you drive everything from the tractor.
Very different these days with a combine.
Yes, yeah. Plus, one of the things about harvesting to thrash later on, you know, saving it up, was that the corn was stored in, you know, barns, so you had to be near a wooden floored barn. If you put a bag of wheat on the floor, it sucks the water up out of the ground. So you have them either on a wooden floor with a big gap underneath, or get rid of it, sell it. So some of it would be eaten on at home, and some be sold on the open market. You know, somebody would come with a tractor and trailer and take 6 bags away, or whatever.
Is that before your dryer?
Pardon?
Is that before the drying machine? Before the dryer came into.
Oh, before dryers came.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's a whole different system.
Much later. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Were there any particular jobs on the farm that you enjoyed, and any that you really did not like doing?
Thing I didn't like was hoeing turnips.
I think I can understand that.
Yeah. No, I can remember. I can remember once going down. I had my own hoe. You know, so I'd be probably 10. And I had my own hoe that I was hoeing with. But the idea was to get the weeds away from the turnip. Everything's changed now because the turnips never see anything like that. The crop is grown and then it's sprayed with a weed killer or a growth enhancer, or whatever else is that the salesman think you ought to be putting on.
So were the turnips for animal feed?
Or? Yes, mostly. Yeah.
To feed in the winter, or?
Yes, yeah. And also for sheep, they needed, well, no, for cattle, I suppose, more than sheep, they would need to be chopped. So my father had an expensive chopping machine for dealing with turnips, which they could eat much more of chopped stuff than they could of whole turnips.
Yeah.
Cows only got teeth in the bottom, didn't have top teeth, so it was a case of scraping it off, which would take a long time.
So did they eat the tops, or had the
no, just the
root?
Just the root.
Yeah. So
yeah, the tops had probably died away. Yeah, but if they hadn't, there were machines that would just go flail the top off the things. And then farm men would load them into trailers, one turnip at a time. Yeah.
So
was my first job when I went to Mr. Shepherd's. We got the harvest in, and then Mr. Shepherd said, it's time you got the turnips in, so I went and harvested turnips.
Now, how old were you then?
just left you.
Probably 4 weeks.
No, how old was I there? Yeah. How old were you?
Oh.
Were you at the time?
21.
Yeah.
Right. I got a job as a farm manager. I looked after the everyday working of the farm for this lady who was a widow.
Was that in this area or?
Piercebridge.
Piercebridge, all right.
Yeah, so it wasn't very far away from home.
No.
Yeah.
So when you were 10 and having to hoe the turnip field.
I didn't have to, I chose to.
You chose to?
I got threepence, I think.
But was how long did you have to do that each day, was it?
All day.
All day?
Yeah.
And you got threepence?
Were we recording this?
Yes.
Can you stop?
No, this is...
Johnny, you said to me, when you were away at school all this time, it was in holidays when you chose to do it.
Oh,
you see, this is where I'm getting... He was educated in Edinburgh.
Weekends were miles away.
It was your holiday time.
Were there any jobs then that you particularly liked? Because you talked about the one you didn't like doing, but anything you...
Anything to do with tractors, I suppose.
Anything to do with tractors.
Yeah. But remembering that... the tractor jobs were taken over from horses, and tractor machine, you know, the things that the tractor pulled weren't cheap, you know, so not very many farmers would have a good set of tractors and machines to do the work they wanted. A lot of farmers adapted horse things, you know, they'd add two or three together. Because a 20 horsepower tractor could do more work than 10 horses.
Anything else that you particularly enjoyed? Or I suppose as long as you were on a tractor, it didn't matter what it was.
Yes,
it was,
I suppose.
Did it take long to learn how to drive the tractor?
No, you just jump on and drive it.
You just. Did anybody give you any training?
Simon will tell you, because he did exactly the same as I had done. And nowadays you have to be 11 to sit on a tractor, even with a cab on. You'll see everybody breaks the law, but the police haven't got time to go and chase all farmers whose little children are sitting on the tractor seat.
But you mustn't.
You know, it does happen.
Nowadays you have to be very safety conscious.
Yes. But a lot of people will say it's much better knowing that your child is safe in the tractor cab than walking around in the stackyard and students come tearing through on the latest Massey Ferguson or whatever it is.
Are there any other recollections from your time as a farmer here you want to talk about?
Yeah.
We'll leave it going. It's quite
a lot. If you were to read what you wrote and showed me, it would make very... If you just read it...
Well, I'll hand you the paper or you can read.
No.
Yeah.
You read it. You read it.
Right.
If it repeats some of what
that's
said,
all right. That's
it doesn't
all right.
Matter.
It's just
can you will edit this, won't you?
This is about me.
Yeah,
all right. I was born here during the war. That means the last one. Yeah. And I went to school in Eaglescliffe. I used to go to what became Teesside High.
Oh yes.
It was called Cleveland School.
It was
run by Miss Chalmers, whose sister lived in Eastbourne Avenue.
All right.
That's quite interesting. Yeah. I went then to a school at Saltburn, which was called Glenhow.
That's a bit of a journey from here.
It was, but I only went there, as a boarder.
Oh.
So I'd have 8 weeks at school or whatever, and 2 weeks at home.
For four terms?
Yeah. Then I went to a school near Edinburgh called Loretto, but nothing to do with Our Lady of Loretto. And I can't remember the reason why it was called Loretto, but it was something to do with the headmaster who owned it. Yeah. Then I did my A-levels and I studied at Newcastle, got a BSc in agriculture. When I graduated, I got a job as a farm manager at a farm at Piercebridge, which I was there for 2 years. Up to the point where I left university, I'd hardly ever lived at home because I was a boarder from six. Yeah, and ended up at university when I was 21, you know, so nearly all that time
I was away
doing education.
Right.
You see, that is all the time. Your memories are of what you've been told.
Yeah, so I always missed the bonfire because I was away at school or university, whatever. The council decided a number of years ago that they weren't going to let us have the bonfire on the green anymore. So I have my own private little bonfire behind the shed.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I'm a bit disappointed about. I mean, we could have a village bonfire somewhere where, you know, a lot more people would go. But it did get a bit unruly because a lot of people from outside the area, which means Croft Road. Well, you're going to edit it, aren't you? Yes. Well, I'm just trying to cut down
the fire. No, read that, I love it.
Yeah. I told you that I was on a farm at Piercebridge,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I met a group when I came back home, I was working here. But I joined a group of people who then lived in the village who were keen to get it designated as a conservation area. You know, the local council were told to get things going, okay? And I joined a group which was known as the Village Amenity Society. Amenity being all the bits and pieces that go on in the village, you know, there. And in fact, Egglescliffe was, I think, either the second or the third village to be awarded the conservation status. And I was chairman of the committee that put that together. I remember going around and counting trees and getting them, drawing them on a map. But that's the sort of thing that they wanted. But we're lucky in that one of the people who was involved in the village part was worked for Stockton Council, and it was right up his street doing this.
Right.
So he got the paperwork put together for us, which was then sent off to the whoever it went to. And so that's how we managed to be the first, second or third place to be awarded.
Very good.
Yeah. Also, one or two of the things, we used to plant flowers on and around the green in little plant areas rather than plant pots, so you're having to water them every day. Mm. And they used to have, I don't know whether they're still on the go, Tidy Village competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Eglescliffe won it 2 or 3 times in a row, very nearly claimed the trophy, which was, what was it, a horseshoe, was it? I can't remember. There was a thing on a pole that the local council put up for us. And, yeah, as soon as the year was up, you know, they took it away. But it was beside the village cross, if you know where that is.
Yeah.
Doesn't look much like of a cross anymore. Yeah. Mm. Oh, yes, then at one stage, because of the increase of children in the area, the local schools became too small. So one of the things that they decided to do was build a bigger school, which they commandeered the rectory vegetable garden and put the school in there. That's why it's in that position.
That was the rectory? The
rectory's
vegetable garden?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know.
Where the school is.
Right.
You just missed a bit out about the... going back to the Amenity Society, after the flower competition, I think you were telling me.
Local Tidy Village competition.
And, yes?
No, it's all right.
Yes. Yeah. We became secretary to be awarded secretary, conservation status. Yeah, other achievements, we won the local Tidy Village competition. Yeah. And one thing we did was revive the village pound. I don't know where you know where that is.
Down by the telephone box.
Beside the telephone box, yeah. That's where all the stray animals were put at night, and then you had to pay to get them out. Yeah, so that's, you know, you don't see very many of those.
No.
No. But I'm quite pleased that it's still there, because, you know, people have wanted to do something else with it, you know, so, yeah.
And where is it?
So it's one of the, it's a part of the village's history, that.
It's in the ownership, it's in your ownership, but still part of the village history.
Yes. at some stage, the parish council decided that they needed a village hall. And at the same time, there must have been somebody on the council who was pushing for this. At the same time, they wanted a... Did I say they wanted a village hall? Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. I already was chairman of the Amenity Society, which got a lot of these little jobs done. And we had a... They built the new school. I can't remember what stage that was. But then somebody decided, well, we need a village hall. So the old school, instead of being knocked down,
mm-hmm.
was done up and an entrance added, as it is now.
Mm.
and they got they had a couple of meetings about what should we do with this building, and it was the church money that had been used to do the hall up. Local sorry, I'm just trying to get this in
you
order.
You heard that Bill Bingham.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You can read from that distance, can you? Yeah, that's clever.
No, I remember you saying it, yeah.
Yeah. No, we had there was a couple of meetings. It was Councillor Gregory, was the one who got things going. He booked the school to have a meeting to see what we could do with what is now the village hall, which mm-hmm. was the school. And after the first meeting, it was decided to put a committee together to see how we could go about getting the old school made into the new village hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the second meeting that was held, quite a few people had things to say, and towards the end of the meeting time, somebody, I think it was in the church, was it?
Yeah.
Might have been. Yes, I think it was probably in the church. This fellow, Bill Bingham, got up and said, "You can't possibly have this as a village hall. Who's going to look after it? Who's going to do this, that and the other?" And had all sorts of complaints. And after a while, Councillor Gregory said, "You'll be exactly the right person to run the village hall. I propose you the secretary."
Yeah.
So we all voted for Bill Bingham to be secretary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, before that, about 2 or 3 days before that, Dick Greenhalgh, who was one of the local council people who was, although he didn't live in the village, he was very much a villager. He came to see me and he said, "We need a chairman for the village hall. Will you be it?" So I said, "Nobody'll vote for me." "Well, think about it and I'll talk to you on Thursday or whatever day." And then I was proposed to be, on the committee with Bill Bingham as the secretary. I can't remember who was treasurer. Was it Richard Fawcett?
Richard Fawcett.
Mm. Oh, he had been on the parish council, the parochial church council, and he got the financial bits all underway.
Mm-hmm.
So the two people who really got the village hall going, Bill Bingham,
Richard Fawcett,
ex-Navy, ex-Royal Merchant Navy, and Richard Fawcett.
Yes.
So, So, that did very good. There's a note here which says I was chairman of the parish hall committee for 39 years. For the first 10 years we did the bookings because Bill went and got married and disappeared.
Yes.
He was Merchant Navy.
Yes.
Captain.
Yes.
So he used to go wherever he wanted to, pay nothing.
Mm.
Yeah.
But anyway. Mm. We did it for 10 years, I remember, as booking secretary and chairman.
Yeah.
I
managed to retire after I'd done 39 years, so going through the 40-year gap or whatever they call it.
And then.
Yeah. When I retired, Simon took over. But I made sure I wasn't in the parish hall when they were having the vote.
So you were quite proud of the fact that Simon took over from you, because he's ongoing to this day now.
Yeah, the rest of it's just a bit of farming. Yeah.
Well, I think we've covered an awful lot of ground.
Right. Well, just a little note here, back to the village I've put here. Yeah, years ago, I could name everybody who lived round the village green. You know, go say hello,
yeah,
have a cup of tea with them, whatever. Yeah. Now, there's only both you and me, I know.
No,
that's about it.
Well, no.
Tony Harrison.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my brother.
Tony Hopwell.
Brenda. So,
oh, Brenda, yeah.
Brenda's a virtual newcom. Is he? Oh, you know, yeah, a lot of people, but they're not. They're not,
no, we don't.
Yeah.
I don't think we do.
Yeah. It's rather nice.
Well, we've been. Oh, you've been talking now for not far short of an hour. So I don't think there can be too much more left to talk about, really. Unless there's any little gems that have just suddenly come to mind. I would suggest we've reached a sensible end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just one little farming incident.
Yeah.
Well, it's not incident, it's what happened. We used to get POWs to come on thrashing days.
All right.
To help with the help with the work. So I mean that's just something I've sort of remembered off the top of my head.
Yes, prisoners of war used to come and work here, didn't they? Yeah. German, you had German people.
Yes, Germans. We used to go in, my father had a horse trailer which he put on the back of his car, and he used to go into Stockton. I think, do you know where the post office used to be? No, it doesn't matter. Yarm Lane.
Yep.
You know when you reach the high street?
Yep.
You turn left to go up the high street.
Yep.
Well, just on the left there, before the Odeon Cinema, was the post office.
Yeah.
And that's where he used to pick the Germans up. How on earth he found them, I don't know. Unless they had a soldier with them. They might have had a soldier with them.
They would have done, of course.
Put them in the trailer.
Put them in the trailer, yeah. Because he
That would go with the beginning of the thing.
The trailer he had, because he hunted quite a bit. And whereas most people would ride to wherever the meet was, we were a bit away from the centre of... My father was in the Hurworth Hunt. He was chairman of it for endless years. But because we were on this side of the river, we had to go through Yarm and then the 5 miles or whatever it was to wherever they had a meet. So he had a trailer, which then did the Germans. So they got free lunch. and then take them back to Stockton High Street where they met their soldier.
And went back
took
home.
Took them to wherever the camp was.
Yeah.
Have you stopped recording?
No.
Oh, God.
Right.
I think I'm happy to call it
a day.
A day. I think it's almost an hour, so that is an awful lot of material. So I'll just say thank you very much for that, because it's invaluable. It really is. I'm Ian Reynolds. I'm with Johnny Smith, and it's the 11th of January 2018 for a little piece of extra information.
Right, Simon is following in my footsteps, which makes me very proud. He is taking the farm forward for the next generation and keeping alive the Smith farming heritage of my family in Eggleslough.